Welcome to a Wednesday edition of Locked On Heat. My name is Wes Goldberg, and in a few moments, me and my co-host David Ramil will be joined by The Ringer's Haley O'Shaughnessy, who recently spent a couple of days in Miami with Hassan Whiteside and wrote a great piece about it that you can find at theringer.com. It's a great conversation where we talk about Whiteside's new sense of self-awareness, his relationship with Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley, and where he stands in the organization right now, and we get some great stories that Haley didn't have room for in her piece. So let's get to it. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we're joined now by friend of the program and writer for The Ringer, Haley O'Shaughnessy, who wrote an awesome must-read feature on Hassan Whiteside, the polarizing Miami Heat center that we have grown to have a love-hate relationship on this podcast with. But Haley, first of all, awesome story. You spent a couple of days in Miami with Whiteside. I'm sure that that was a very eventful experience for you, and you captured a lot of it in the feature that you wrote for The Ringer. But I do want to ask you, you spent 2 days with him. There had to be a story or something that you left out, and I want to know what it is.
Well, thank you for plugging that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
Let's see. I mean, there were a lot of things that I just didn't have room for that we like went off and, you know, did either in like the tour of his house or, you know, we sat down and had that conversation. But we actually went bowling. And I think I mentioned that in the piece. But what I didn't share was that I had told him that I hadn't been bowling since I was, you know, like younger. It's been a really long time. But I got a strike on my second turn. And so he started calling me a hustler. But by the end he won. So it's just like, you know, he's just a really, really funny guy and really fun to hang out with him.
Did you get any cheese fries at the bowling alley or? We gotta know. He's supposed to be in shape now. You got the dirt.
Well, honestly, like so we also like had a couple meals at his house and they were all extremely healthy. Okay. He had a personal chef, a lot of veggies. And then I think I mentioned this in the piece, but he had passed their physical and he was, you know, his trainer was talking about it. It's like a really important thing for all the Heat players to pass. Obviously, you know, they're like so intense about their conditioning. So, yeah, I definitely think he's in good shape. No cheese fries, but there was this, like, light-up bowling ball that he was really sad that they didn't have anymore. And so it was apparently, like, really heavy. And so I was like, oh, you like it because it's heavier. It probably, like, is more effective. And he was like, no, I like it because it lights up. So that was great.
That's interesting. That sounds like it would be a challenge. And so I'm kind of curious, you know, first and foremost, and this is like a two-parter, but maybe one feeds into the other. First of all, like, why Hassan Whiteside? Because we're seeing a lot of attention. There was a great piece on Bleacher Report from Tom Haverstraw about Whiteside. So another feature there. And then, you know, following up from that, you know, how did you arrange for this process of being able to spend this kind of amount of time with him? Because I think our listeners would be curious as to how you were able to arrange for, you know, 2 days spending that time in Miami with Whiteside. But not only that, but you were able to talk to the elusive Pat Riley and get, and you know, Eric Spoelstra to talk on the record too. So all these different aspects of it that I think are super fascinating, especially for our listeners.
Well, you know, I'm just really good at my job.
No, damn right you are. Absolutely. I mean, that goes without saying.
No, I'm just kidding. I had thought about doing a profile on him a long time ago. I think it was like when the summer started or maybe even before that when, you know, the Heat season ended because, you know, I followed him on Snapchat since his Snapchat became a thing and someone that entertaining, it was kind of surprising to me that he kind of was getting a reputation for being like someone who was negative. And, you know, after reading profiles about him, like when he blew up in 2015, it just seemed like he had a difficult life and upbringing. And I was curious, like, also, you know, people always say like he went to Sacramento, it didn't work out. He went overseas, it didn't work out. But it was, I was kind of like, why didn't it work out? And so I thought that that was interesting. That was something I wanted to ask him. And then he also was just, he said in a bunch of interviews that he wants people to remember his name and kind of like not forget about him. And so I just thought that that I'd like to explore that a little bit more, especially in the context of him not having a great season, because there's really nothing he can do to control being forgotten or being remembered if he's on the bench. And as far as how it was all arranged, you know, I reached out to his agent and he was really great, Sean Kennedy. And that's how I got time with Hassan. And to be honest, like with Riley, I didn't think he would probably want to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was really great. And actually at the end, I asked him, I was like, why did you do this interview? You never do interviews. And he just said, well, I don't like to do interviews about myself. But I think that he just knew that maybe Hassan was in a spot where he wasn't being seen in the best light. And so he probably thought that he could help with that. And so I think that's probably why he ended up doing it. And with Spoelstra, I mean, I think that he would have been open to it no matter what. I mean, he's such an interesting guy. And we did talk about Hassan for a long time, but we also talked about a lot of other stuff, especially that book that I mentioned that he gave Hassan.
Yeah.
I had read it. And so I recognized it when it was on his counter. And it's about like being vulnerable and the power of like vulnerability. And so I was just like, why did you give him a book on vulnerability? And then we ended up just talking about like the actual book for a long time. He's just such an interesting guy. And so they were both very generous with their time.
That's really interesting. I'm curious because you talk about that pre-draft workout that Hassan was in, and then there are these disparate, you know, memories of how that workout took place. And what is those differing memories? What does that say about these three different people? You know, how is Hassan viewed, in your opinion anyway, by Riley and Spoelstra? Because we've heard that, you know, there is some tension in the front office, and there are obviously some rumors there that Hassan, you know, following what happened at the end of last season in the playoffs when he made those public comments, that he was on his last days with the Heat, and clearly he's still part of this roster and he hasn't been included in any of the Jimmy Butler trade talks. So why do you think there's these differing opinions of that one workout? Is it just because of bad memory or how it works out? Or is Hassan viewed differently by those two men that have such great influence in the Heat organization?
I don't know where the mix-up came from with the workout. I remember when I asked him about it in, you know, just the look of confusion on his face was, I could tell instantly that I maybe had the story wrong. And so I, you know, the first thing I did when I left was I Googled, you know, what I had looked up and what I had taken notes on. And sure enough, like that was the story that everyone, that was what everyone said had happened. And he was just so intent on like, that's never happened. And so, honestly, when I'm called Spoelstra, I thought that maybe it would be like somewhere in the middle. And when he said like, no, that's not what happened. I just thought that was really interesting. And so I think that maybe that's maybe it was remembered differently. I don't want to speculate by someone else there. I'm not sure what happened, that those different stories came out. But I think that probably Riley understands Hassan a lot better than other people do because of his experience with, you know, the centers in the league in the past. I think that he's a little bit more used to people with those strong personalities because anymore today, people are prepped before they go into the draft. You know, they're really like media ready. And, you know, Hassan was overseas for a great portion of his, I mean, not a great portion of his career, but he's overseas for a couple of years. He was in the D League. He was never in the light. And then, you know, usually when somebody then returns to the NBA, then it's gradual, but he wasn't, he just instantly became this like sensation, you know, he's getting like triple doubles, he's getting double doubles. And it was kind of like into a couple months after they signed him. And so I think that like, because he blew up so fast, both of them are really empathetic to the fact that like, he doesn't have that traditional, path of like gradually becoming a star. And also, like I said, like he just doesn't have the same media training. And so after you talk to him for a while, and both of them said this also, you just find out that he is not coming from a bad place. Right. And I think that that probably was something that Spoelstra understood at the end of the season, you know, after they talked. And something that he said that stuck out to me was that he told Hassan that he was in the trenches with him. So as far as the trade rumors, you're right, he hasn't gotten included in any of them regarding Butler, but he wasn't a lot during the season. And so, you know, I'm not sure if something changed between them. We didn't talk about that, but I mean, he's not anymore. And I'm not sure if that's because it doesn't look like it's going to happen, or I'm not sure if that's because suddenly they've, you know, that suddenly they see that he's healthy again and that he is in good shape. And, right. you know, that has to do with it, or really, you know, he got through to them and their conversations this summer.
Yeah. It just seems like that the front office has done like a 180 on how they view him, like where they were, at least from what we've heard, that they were willing to move him pretty early on in the off season. And then obviously now he's valued. And we've heard a lot of, you know, from his teammates, from Spoelstra and Riley, obviously through your piece, that now he has their kind of unbridled support, which is pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also wonder, I mean, I just don't think that maybe anyone had asked if they ever didn't have his support, you know, or if they ever weren't supporting him. I just think that it was kind of an uncomfortable time. And the only thing that the public had to go off of was the fact that he, you know, publicly was saying all this stuff. Right. About them, but I don't really think it went both ways as far as like talking to the public about it.
Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com, that's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. So you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever the right opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. We all try to avoid awkwardness. They are made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than at the pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, and faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. I think of everybody on the Heat's roster, the player that probably benefits the most from spending a couple days with and really getting to know that player and then writing the profile, it would be Whiteside, just because, you know, I think there is a narrative along in the local media, at least, that they don't really like to cover Hassan Whiteside. There was a big push basically to try to get him out the door. I mean, they were writing negative things, and I go back to that story about the fact that, yeah, he did leave a pre-draft workout early, but he left it early because he had to get stitches. And it's like, yeah, they kind of got half the story. And then wherever that story kind of went from and ended up in NBA 2K somehow, it kind of was just like the half the story. But that was enough to kind of have enough of the media to run with it. And I don't want to be up here being like anti-local media guy, but it does kind of feel like there was a negative narrative there. And now that narrative is starting to switch. I mean, with profiles like yours, a couple of other pieces that have been out there. And then let's face it, the way that he's played in this preseason has been really damn good. He's looked really good. Maybe that's why his name has been out of trade rumors. Maybe Miami really is at the point where, look, we tried to trade him. We weren't going to get the value that we wanted to get out of him. We already heard that Pat Riley wasn't willing to trade Whiteside for just another smaller bad contract, that he wanted to try to get value out of Whiteside one way or the other. And maybe he's come to the conclusion now where he's like, well, the most value I can get out of Whiteside is just having him on the roster and seeing if he'll bounce back. A lot of people think that he will. After you spent time with him, after you talked with Riley, Spoelstra, and just basically what you've seen in the preseason so far watching Whiteside, do you think he's poised for a breakout year again?
I mean, I don't think maybe like a recovery year, but I don't think breakout again, because, I mean, he is, looking at traditional centers, he is one of the best ones in the league. But I think that probably we've seen the height of his game, but you know, it got him a max contract, you know? So it's not like that ceiling is low. I'm not entirely sure what much more he can do in terms of being diverse on offense. And I think that you also saw Riley leaning away from that as an idea. You know, we talked about how a traditional center fits in this small ball era. And his answer wasn't that Hassan is, you know, going to start shooting threes and trying to get a jumper. It was that you actually still need both. So it seems like they're doubling down on him doing what he does best. And I don't think that that's going to transform this season. Even though he has taken threes in the preseason, it makes me think of Taj Gibson last year. You know, he took a couple and everyone was all excited about it. But it's I don't think that's going to be the player that he is this season.
I mean, like you said, he took the threes. He's been practicing the threes. Riley, it's interesting you said that because I got that sense reading the piece that you asked that question. He kind of was like, no. Like, big men, they still have a place in this league. And it's just like, all right, sure. But, you know, big men have a place in this league, but not at $25 million a year. And we've seen Whiteside take the threes. We've seen him on Instagram saying that he can shoot, that there's a difference between that you can and you're allowed to shoot them. And Spo, when he's been asked about Whiteside taking long-range jumpers and things like that, has also done kind of the Riley thing and kind of leaned away from it and not said no completely, but also said, like, we're not going to encourage it either, basically. Where do you stand on that? Just your opinion. Like, Whiteside seems to have decent enough touch from the perimeter. Do you think that Jonas Valanciunas last year took 1-3 a game, and that was enough to sort of change the way teams played him. Is that something that you think Whiteside should be allowed to do?
You know, it's interesting because it's so late in his career that that's just not how he was brought up and that's not what he was allowed to do. And they kind of, it stunts the growth and the range of a center. And you see that a lot in like his generation and older. And I almost think I don't want to say the word waste of time, but I almost think that he's so skilled at what he can do already that I would rather him double down on that. Kind of like Andre Drummond, you know, he's always been for like two seasons, like, I'm going to shoot threes, I'm going to get a jumper. And I just think that it's probably more beneficial for them to focus on what they do best because you're only becoming, you know, extremely, maybe at best mediocre at shooting and for what, you know, because you're still going to be on the court. And I understand with Miami that, you know, the guards are really drive heavy and it's a lot of driving in and kicking out. And so having him there clogging the lane, but I think that figuring out a fix to that might be easier than trying to transform him into somebody like a completely different player with another skill set when he's, you know, already 29.
It kind of ties into that because one of the most vocal criticisms that we've lobbied here on the podcast is that he's not very good at passing and sharing the ball. And so we feel like that kind of disrupts chemistry with his teammates and stuff like that. But on a personal level, we've also heard that maybe he's not necessarily appreciated as much by his teammates. In the Haberstroh piece that came out last week, you know, not a lot of his teammates responded to his request for an early morning workout. And so that kind of just fuels that fire that, as far as what we know, is that he might not necessarily be beloved by his teammates. Did you get a sense that maybe he wasn't as well liked? I mean, his personality seems so unusual, and that you mentioned the people pleasing aspect of it. And obviously he's trying to ingratiate himself to his teammates, but he also kind of rubs people the wrong way, I think. And maybe he just doesn't understand where to balance that, those two sides of his personality. And I know he was going off to a team barbecue, if I recall correctly. Did you get any sense that, that he gets along with his teammates, or that he might not necessarily be as appreciated as he thinks he might be?
I think that this summer and part of his growth this summer has had a lot to do with him starting to understand and realize that he is being misunderstood by a lot of people. And so I'm not sure what his relationship was like with his teammates before last season, but I mean, you know, he told me a lot of stories about, you know, a lot of funny stories about Wade, who lives down the street from him. He told me some funny stories about his other teammates. Actually, I'll share the Wade one with you. He was sitting in his backyard earlier this summer, and Wade pulled up on a golf cart, and it was like 3 a.m. in the morning. And Hassan was like, "What are you doing?" And he was like, "Oh, I'm just checking on you." And then he drove off. So I thought that was pretty funny. But, you know, when I talked to Spoelstra, he said that what else is, you know, misunderstood about Hassan is that he is somebody that everyone loves in the locker room. And he makes people laugh. And I guess this is not like very journalistic of me, but based off his Snapchats, it seems like he is close with his teammates and, you know, especially like Dragic. And I have no reason to believe anything else other than what I've read before. And I guess what I learned from this story is I might not want to rely on what I've read in the past.
Okay, interesting.
Well, thanks for sharing those stories. Really, really great insight, Haley. But you got to go. I'm sure you've got to keep practicing at the bowling alley or something tonight. But if you, before you go, can you tell our listeners where they can find you, where you want them to find you?
Sure. I am on Twitter at HaleyOSomething. You can read me at theringer.com.
Perfect. Thanks so much for coming on, Haley.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening. One last thing before you go. If you run a company and you're unhappy with your return from advertising online or in print, try something new and advertise on a podcast here at Locked On Heat. This is a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. More and more people are listening every day. 50% of U.S. households listen to a podcast, and 1 in 5 Americans between ages 18 and 49 listen to at least one a month. That's according to Nielsen. Thanks to the rise in mobile options from iTunes to Spotify and more, to your smart speaker at home, there's more ways than ever to listen to podcasts. Now is the time to get in. Be ahead of your competition and start advertising on a podcast with us. Our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens, so you get what you pay for, with numbers to back it up. Whereas print, TV, and radio ads are a shot in the dark. You have no idea who is reading, watching, or listening. That's not the case with podcasts. If you want to reach engaged, passionate, and knowledgeable South Floridians, this is the way to do it. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company on the next episode.